You're listening to a couple of annoyed grunt boys, and this is I Off Springfield. On September 8th, 1966, an American science fiction television show created by Gene Roddenberry premiered on NBC. That show, Star Trek. The adventures of Captain Kirk and the crew of the USS Enterprise only lasted three seasons until its cancellation in 1969. But that was only the beginning for the iconic pop culture franchise. TV stations across the world would air old episodes in syndication. This generated ratings for the stations and enthusiasm grew for more Star Trek. Gene Roddenberry began looking for ways to beam the crew back onto television sets. Finally, in 1973, 4 years after the end of the original series, the crew of the Enterprise was back on TV, but in animated form. Star Trek the Animated Series only lasted two seasons with a total of 22 episodes. During that time, Paramount, which owned Star Trek, struck up plans to bring live-action Star Trek back onto TV. Paramount was ready to start their own TV network with Star Trek Phase 2 to be their flagship show. Ultimately, the planned network folded and Star Trek Phase 2 was shelved. Then in the summer of 1977, another cultural star premiered and that would change the film industry forever. That was George Lucas's Star Wars. With the huge success of Star Wars, many film studios wanted to piggyback on that success and produce their own space franchise. Paramount, being one of those studios, took their Star Trek and finally would reunite Captain Kirk and the crew of the Enterprise, but not on the small screen, but rather the big screen. In December of 1979, Star Trek the Motion Picture opened in cinemas. The film was met with mixed reviews from fans and critics alike. It did make a profit, allowing for a sequel to be produced. And in 1982, Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan opened to the delight of fans and critics. Thus, the return of Star Trek on the big screen, and with films coming out for over the next 20 years. One thing was still missing, Star Trek on TV. But that changed in 1987 when Star Trek The Next Generation was launched. This time following the exploits of a new crew on a new USS Enterprise, and the Star Trek boom of the 90s would begin. New spin-offs were created. In 1993, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. In 1995, Star Trek Voyager, which was the flagship for Paramount's TV network, UPN. Then in 2001, Star Trek Enterprise. But the oversaturation of the franchise was causing its decline. The film Star Trek Nemesis in 2002 was not favored by critics or fans, and due to low box office, the film franchise was seemingly dead. In 2005, the last Star Trek series, Star Trek Enterprise, was canceled only after four seasons. Star Trek was nowhere to be seen on the big or small screen for the next 4 years. In 2009, Star Trek returned to the big screen with J.J. Abrams helming a semi-soft reboot with Captain Kirk and the crew of the USS Enterprise. But it wasn't until 2017 when Star Trek would be back on the small screen with its next iteration, Star Trek Discovery. Much like the planned Star Trek Phase 2 and Star Trek Voyager, Discovery was the launch of CBS's own streaming service, CBS All Access. Being a huge success for CBS, they went forward with more Star Trek content. Following Discovery, Sir Patrick Stewart returned as his popular character, Captain Picard, from Star Trek The Next Generation with his own show amply titled Star Trek Picard. Star Trek is seemingly back with more shows in production for future release, such as Star Trek Strange New Worlds, an untitled series starring actress Michelle Yeoh, and a children's animated show for Nickelodeon called Star Trek Prodigy. But before we get to those, Star Trek's eighth television series would premiere in August 2020, and it's something fans haven't seen in 46 years, an animated show, and a premise where Star Trek has never gone before, a sitcom. This week, I Off Springfield will be eyeing the final frontier of the new animated sitcom, Star Trek Lower Decks. I'm half an annoyed grunt boy, Craig, and with me on this trek is...
your other half annoyed grunt boy, Steve.
Steve, this is something that we just dropped on to our subscribers, with no charge, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, we're not sellouts yet. No. What is I Off Springfield?
Well, Craig, it's a chance for us to explore things that are beyond the Simpsons realm.
Are we allowed to do that?
You know, I don't know, but let's just keep on doing it until we get caught.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just something we decided to just drop into the feed every once in a while. There's no set schedule. We're not doing this weekly or monthly or yearly or I don't know.
Yeah, we'll do it when we feel like it.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about just this very first episode of this new Star Trek cartoon, Lower Decks. We're not going to be doing a review every week. So the idea is like we're just going to, much like our podcast, the 130 Simpsons podcast, where we just kind of randomly, you know, grab episodes of The Simpsons. We'll do the same thing with this, just random drops of cartoons, movies, music. I don't know. We don't know.
It could literally be anything.
The next time we do this, it might be something like an episode of The Nanny. We don't know. If you're a Star Trek fan, you just like randomly try to find, you know, reviews or talking about Star Trek Lower Decks. We're not a Star Trek podcast. We're normally a Simpsons podcast. So if you found us just, you know, by randomly finding us, check out our actual series. It's called the 138th Simpsons Podcast, where we review episodes from The Simpsons, but from only seasons 11 and beyond at random.
That's right.
So this week on this IOF Springfield, that's why this podcast is called IOF Springfield, because we're not talking about The Simpsons. And we're going to be watching Star Trek Lower Decks, the very first episode that's on CBS All Access right now. You can get the app. There's a free 7-day trial, so you don't have to pay, and you can watch the episode for free. So let's talk about Star Trek real quick. Steve, what's your relationship with Star Trek?
As a kid, my oldest brother, Mike, was a big fan of the OG series. And so on the weekends, I'd watch that with him often. But I was a little bit too young to get it. I was enamored with the spectacle of it and the way it looked. But it wasn't until The Next Generation when I really got into it with my father, and we'd watch it every week together. We liked the dynamic of the way the second series was, like, it was a bit more analytical, it seemed. And I thought that Riker and Picard were very cool. And as a kid, I wanted to be Wesley. So now not so much.
You don't want to be Wesley or Will Wheaton?
I mean, I've watched a lot of his board game videos. I don't want to be Will Wheaton.
He seems to have a happy life, though.
He's doing everything right. I've got no complaint against him. He's just a big nerd.
And we're not.
I know.
We're literally doing a Star Trek podcast right now.
In lieu of our normal Simpsons podcast. Right. I get it. Yeah. So Next Generation was it for me, though. I do remember, like, going to see some of the movies. I remember seeing them with you. And I don't know that I know a lot of the series after that, but I have a lot of respect for Gene Roddenberry and the ethos of Star Trek. I like that it explores new worlds and is kind of not super violent. It's more exploratory by nature, the way that it parallels, like, philosophy and just different thinking. I think that's really interesting to do with sci-fi. It's like what sci-fi should be. I enjoy the OG series. I enjoyed Next Generation. I've enjoyed a number of the movies, even the newer J.J. Abrams movies. I enjoyed the first two. So yeah, I may not be the biggest of Star Trek fans, but I feel like I have a working knowledge of it. Craig, though, I feel like your relationship to the show is a lot deeper.
I'm a big Star Trek fan. It's probably one of my favorite franchises. It's in the top three, top five, probably. Like, I'm also one of those people that likes the Star Wars and the Star Trek, because they're two different beasts. I mean, Star Wars is fantasy. Star Trek is science fiction.
Yeah, I will say that if I did have to pick a world to be in, I think I relate more to the analytical world of Star Trek rather than the fantasy world of Star Wars. But anyway, yeah. Continue.
Because Star Trek is based off of, you know, humans, whereas Star Wars, they're aliens from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away that have weird names like Ben and Luke and then Kylo and Goo-ba-ba-doo-poo-woo. Anyway, so I grew up with Star Trek. My mom was a big Star Trek fan, and so I grew up with watching the movies and the original series, and then of course Next Generation, and then I've watched every single series, the Deep Space Nine and the Voyagers, the Enterprise, and then currently right now Discovery and Picard. And so I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what they're going to do with Lower Decks. And here's my biggest concern right now.
Yes.
Is Star Trek and comedy. It's not a great thing.
I will say that there was a clip, and you know this probably more than I do, but with H. John Benjamin and the Tribbles.
Okay, we'll talk about this real quick here. So bringing this up real quick. So Star Trek and comedy have never really been, like, great together. When Star Trek tries to do humor, it kind of falls flat.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few exceptions, and that is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. People will call that the whale movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a legit up comedy, and it works. Other than that, like Star Trek, when they try to be funny, again, it falls flat. Now, I said in the intro, in 2017, Star Trek Discovery came out, and I forgot to mention that there's something that the CBS All Access is doing called Short Treks. And this is just like little, like, 5-minute little webisodes, essentially. And they delve into, like, whatever they, you know, just kind of like fun little stories. So they did like a little animated thing that was kind of fun, and just kind of like just you know, little filler things for Star Trek Discovery or just the new Star Trek. And they did something with John H. Benjamin, like you said, mm-hmm. about Tribbles, and that was legit comedy spoof.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a nice take on the Star Trek lore and also used John Benjamin's classic comedic timing that he does so well.
And his great voice, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was really good. He also has a new album of him playing instrumental movie covers, even though he doesn't know how to play any instruments, which is a follow-up to his jazz album that he came out with a few years ago, where he played piano. Piano.
You're so fancy. Piano.
Piano. With an actual jazz band, and they play like jazz covers, and they just let him go ham, even though he doesn't know what he's doing. So I highly recommend both those albums.
Are we going to skip the Star Trek and just do the John H. Benjamin?
Yep. We'll talk about Bob's Burgers, Wet Hot American Katz. Summer, Dr. Katz. Yeah.
I love it. He's a great voice actor because he doesn't have to change his voice.
Hi, I'm Archer. Hi, yeah. I'm Bob.
Yeah, I'm Ben. Isn't this Ben?
Yeah.
Dr. Katz? See, that's not okay. That's another thing this show could do. We can start, we'll watch an episode of Bob's Burgers or Dr. Katz. Sky's the limit, guys.
Exactly. And if there's something that you want us to watch or review, let us know.
Yeah, just email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com. You could contact us on Twitter at 138simpsons. We're not going to have a IOF Springfield email yet. Probably not. We'll Probably stick not, with yeah. our 183 Simpsons. That's our brand mm-hmm. for now. But yeah, so we'll see what an animated Star Trek comedies looks like.
I'm excited for this, Craig. Let's check it out, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about Second Contact, the first episode of Lower Decks, written by Michael McCann, directed by Brian J. Kelly. Your in-universe date is 57436.2 or 2380. The original air date is August 6th, 2020. And this is the 779th episode of 779 episodes of Star Trek.
That's a lot of episodes, Steve.
It is. I mean,
do we have 778 more to review?
Oh, boy. Does this work chronologically backwards?
Yeah. That would be really weird because, like, I don't understand what's going on because I would think the last one would have been the Star Trek Picard, like, season finale.
So yeah.
Like, all right. Well, that was cool. And then you go back like, oh okay.
Like, I just imagine, like, the saga of the Borgs and TNG. Like, yeah. Oh, they're Borgs now. And then they revert to not that. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Huh. Weird. Okay. Is there more episodes of The Simpsons now, or?
Not quite yet, but give it a few years.
All right. Well, this isn't a Star Trek podcast, guys. This is our eye off Springfield.
That's right.
We're not doing all that. But so it was written by Mike McCann. And if you're not familiar with him, he's a writer.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a creator of an animated comedy called Solar Opposites.
Oh, that is a the dude from Rick and Morty who's not Dan Harmon, Justin Roiland, I think.
Roiland, yeah. Speaking of Rick and Morty, so he was also a writer and producer on Rick and Morty. That's why the animation looks like Rick and Morty.
That's where, okay, that makes sense.
Which is Titmouse, I think, is the production company
mm-hmm.
up in Vancouver. And Mike McCann, he got a Primetime Emmy Award for animated program for his work on supervising producer for the episode Pickle Rick, which the internet seems to love that meme.
It's so funny for some reason.
I've never seen it.
I have, and I don't understand why people like it so much. It's he turns into a pickle, and then he's like builds a pickle up with like a rat rib cage, and I don't know.
Maybe we're not the demographic, Steve.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I feel like on paper I should like Rick and Morty, and I've seen several episodes, but...
And we like Dan Harmon, because we're huge Community fans.
Yeah, I just feel that the audience makes the show unwatchable.
Do you think this is set up for fans of Rick and Morty, or...?
On first take, I would say no, because while trying to maintain the world of Star Trek, if they're trying to appeal to the Rick and Morty audience, I feel like they'd go for a bit more outlandish, like interdimensional type stuff. Maybe they will go that way at some point.
Well, we'll see. This episode starts out very majestically with some kind of cool, you know, like beautiful animation of, you know, Star Trek ships and the space station. And you hear a captain's log, which is, you know, very, very much on key with Star Trek
mm-hmm.
starting Iconic. An episode out. So, yeah, with the captain's log. This guy is given the old captain's log. Their ship is the Cerritos. which I think from now on we'll just call it the Doritos.
Mm.
Yeah. I looked up the meaning of Cerritos because you think that Star Trek ships, you always think have like majestic names like the Enterprise and then, or just like, you know, poignant names like the Voyager or the Discovery, right. The Defiant. And Cerritos, I thought, well, maybe it's like a famous scientist or explorer. But no, it's literally a small town in California.
Oh.
So meaningless, which I think is the point of the show, is like this is a meaningless ship. So he's talking about how they're at a Douglas station. Maybe that's a nod to Douglas Adams.
Could be. Or isn't there a, there might be a Douglas Park? No, Douglas, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so they're going to like this planet of the Sarah Michelle Gellar system, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The Buffy universe. Yeah.
To make second contact with the Galdornian High Council. And so they are, there was already a first contact.
Right.
But they're on the second contact, which is something new, I think, in Star Trek they haven't really talked about.
Yeah, because we all know that the first contact is a delicate, high-stakes operation of diplomacy. And the second contact is just for making sure that the paperwork is signed and that they're spelling the names right.
Right. That was kind of a cute little gag right there.
It was. I mean, I think it's a fun nod to Star Trek fans, you know.
Mm-hmm. We see the adventure starting, but we don't see the follow-up.
Yeah.
The boring stuff, which would be, you know, how life works. So it turns out that it's not the captain, Steve. It's actually some ensign named Brad Boilmaker.
Let's just call him okay. Boilermaker.
Ensign Boilermaker, who's played by Jack Quaid. The only thing I really know him from is Amazon show The Boys.
Right.
He's like the main character guy.
I think I saw him. I was looking at his International Movie Database profile. And he was in something else that seemed familiar.
He's in the Hunger Games.
That's what it was. I've never seen those. And Logan Lucky?
That's still on my list of movies I haven't watched yet. And why don't you watch it? I'll get to it.
He's the son of Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, he's a good looking fella.
Yeah.
No wonder he's got some good genetics there.
Better than his uncle.
Is his stepmom like way younger than him, probably?
Yeah, probably.
Dennis Quaid just married some like 22-year-old.
I think so.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. Okay, so so we meet him, and he's interrupted by Beckett Mariner, played by Tawny Newsome.
You say Breckenmeyer?
Yeah, Breckenmeyer. We'll call it. Okay, so Ensign Breckenmeyer, played by Tawny Newsome.
Who is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, and she's also on another
space show,
Space Force. She plays kind of, not the same character, but an astronaut. So I think that's kind of funny. In my head canon, this is like her, the Ensign Mariner's great grandmother.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
We'll go with that. She was also, as fans of podcasts and like the comedy Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
She's also on Bajillion Dollar Properties.
It's now defunct, but Paula Tompkins used to have an improv podcast called Spontanea Nation. And she would appear frequently as both a player and as a guest. And they had a great rapport. And she's a really interesting person. She's like a folk singer. Like, she does some music. She owns horses.
Steve, can you really own a horse? They own you. Fair enough. Yeah, so she's a good actress. And then, so she's pretty crunk right now off of some Romulan whiskey.
Ooh, that's green, right?
Well, you'd think it'd be green because I guess their blood's green, so they're...
What you drink is what your blood is.
Yeah, I guess. Saying. And it's kind of weird, too, because the joke on Star Trek was always like, ooh, Romulan ale. They never said Romulan whiskey, so... And it was also blue.
Yeah.
Anyways, and illegal. But she got it from the Douglas station, and she's also got some a Klingon Batman.
I'm glad you read that, not me.
Yeah, it's a Bat-Leth, Steve. And
it's funny because if I had not seen the episode and I had to read that, I would know what you're talking about. But if you paid me like $20 to say it, I just know.
And you know, it's funny too. Like, she's drunk on that Roman whiskey, and I was thinking, like, when I'm drunk, I don't act that way. Like, high speed talking really fast. Yeah. So I'm thinking the effects of Roman whiskey is more like the effects of Earth cocaine.
Earth cocaine.
Well, if we're in space now, Steve, we have to refer to things to like Earth this or Terra Prime this. So,
I just think it's funny, like, go to a drug dealer. Hey, man, you got any Earth cocaine?
And it's like a Unkar Plukar from Star Wars. Like, We have quarter portion.
Quarter portion.
Are we allowed to have other Star Wars or other star in our Star Trek?
I think so. Maybe.
No. No one's going to listen to this. We're forcing them to listen to this because we're just dropping in your feed, guys.
Yeah.
So she has that batleth and accidentally slices Boilermaker's leg. And then we get the traditional Star Trek type opening credits here.
Before we get to the credits, I want to say that I wasn't sure the tone of this episode, but when they showed the blood of her cutting his leg, just like the visual of it, it was so intense. Like, I thought this is going to be a little different.
And that's kind of Rick and Morty-esque too, right?
Yeah.
Like, not disgusting or...
Yeah, it's not like they could have gone for like a Ren and Stimpy type shot.
Hey, that's
and they didn't do that, which I appreciate because those are gross. But I thought that it was interesting just to show like that violence so quickly.
When like there's very little like and other podcasts where we always have tattoos or shirts, let's just get a shirt of a sliced leg.
I love it. Perfect.
All right. Well, opening credits here. And it's got that kind of majestic Star Trek sound, you know, and then, you know, the fun little asteroids. But then the ship, you know, just kind of gets hit by rocks and
gets sucked into by the belt.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I do like that the throwback to the font of the TNG font,
mm-hmm.
you know, the blue and the and then the characters and or the actors. I think one of the funnier scenes in the opening credits is when you see a bunch of cubes, which are Borg cubes, and the other ships are Romulan ships. And the Doritos flies up and it's like, I'm skipping out, which is kind of funny because if you ever played like any of like the video games where that kind of situation happens, like I think it was like Star Trek Online I played for a couple bits and accidentally like flying into like an area that's not my level. I'm like, yeah, I'm checking out.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the ship flying. You see it's all its majesticness, but it's being... it's attached by like a weird space worm thing.
Slug. Like a space slug. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. I think it's just like sucking on the engines. Maybe it's like a nod to like episodes of Star Trek. I think there was one of TNG where like there was like an entity attached to the Enterprise and it was just literally sucking its energy out.
Am I making it up or was there ever a squid?
Yeah, there was in the very first episode of TNG, it was like two space squids.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, and then the ship just like warps and we start our little adventure here.
Mm-hmm. Second contact.
The second contact, yeah. So the shuttlecraft lands into the hangar of the Doritos and a bunch of ensigns disembark, including an Orion officer named Ivana Tendi, Steve. That's played by Noelle Wells. Steve, where do we know her from?
Saturday Night Live and her amazing music career.
What was the name of that show? Saturday
Night Live.
She's been in a bunch of things too. That's where I remember her from. But she was only on like a season or two, wasn't she?
Yeah, and then she was on Aziz Ansari's Netflix show.
Oh, Master of None. Yeah, yeah. She was one of the main characters. Yeah,
mm-hmm. She's really good in the first season.
So we like her too.
Yeah, I do like when she's getting out of the ship to sign up. First of all, the guy checking her in looks like a mix between David Hyde Pierce and Frasier.
he does, yeah.
But the guy behind him, or behind Noelle Wells,
yeah,
it's the harmonica guy from the TNG.
I forgot his name, but he was like pals with Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, it was Wesley was trying to get into Starfleet Academy, and then he ends up getting into it.
That's right.
I think his name was like Boondock or Moondock or something like that. Mendock, yeah, I think it was maybe not. Anyways, and then he appears again in like a later episode, and like Wesley's like, "Oh, hey, Mendock, what's up, bro?" And he's like, "I'm not Mendock, I'm Boondock. You think we all look alike, you racist little piece of shit." That's essentially what he said. And Wesley's like, "Oh man, I'm racist." We get to see Boilermaker again, who's now healed from that batleth with Mariner. He's fixing up an old replicator, Steve.
Ooh.
Banana hot. Banana hot.
Ah, frickin' burn me.
Is there an Ensign Boimler here?
Hi, here, that's me. Ahoy.
Ensign Tendi, reporting for duty. You're my orientation liaison.
Yes, welcome. Brad Boimler, Ensign, Command Division.
Oh my gosh! I've never worked with commanders before. I'm in sciences.
I love science. It's so sciency. I mean, that blue goes green with your. Great with your.
Yo,
oh
yo!
My God.
What up, Beckett Mariner? Also an ensign, command division, but not quite as impressed with myself as this little rascal over here. You know, we're not actual commanders, by the way. We're more like commanders in training.
I can't believe we're gonna serve side by side, scientists and commanders, an elite team.
Yeah, no, we're not really elite. We're more like the cool, scrappy underdogs of the ship. You know, we don't wash our hands. We're doing kickflips all the time.
But with focus and dedication, you could be chief medical officer someday.
Oh, senior officers are overrated. They're always like stressed out and just yelling about directives. It is better down here where the real action is.
I don't know. Mariner there. Not washing her hands, Steve.
Especially in these times.
Yeah.
Are those times? Sometimes.
They get like COVID 843.2. Those arbitrary numbers that they just have.
Well, given the way that we're handling the COVID pandemic now, it'll still be COVID-19. Yeah. 200 years later.
I could see them doing an episode of Star Trek with a race of people that just couldn't get a pandemic under control. And I kind of think there probably already is an episode out there.
Yeah, probably.
So we kind of get set up there of in pilot episodes of shows. You just really have to establish characters and what their characters like.
Yeah.
So with that clip, we kind of learned that Tindy's all like, you know, gung-ho, wants to be Star Trek. Boilermaker's the same way, whereas Mariner's kind of she's a pessimistic about the whole Starfleet thing.
She's like a Raphael to Boilermaker's Leonardo.
How do you feel about the use of colloquialisms of like the 21st, 20th century, like the yo-yo-yo?
It's weird. That always takes me out of it. And I mentioned it before. Well, I'll get to that point when we get there. But it is weird when you use modern or current slang.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like too over the top, but it is weird.
It kind of jars you.
Yeah.
There's a couple like swearing that comes up in the episode, but they bleep it out, which I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
That's weird because like going back to like the newer Star Treks like Discovery and Star Trek Picard, where they just like drop F-bombs. It's so jarring.
Yeah, that would be weird to hear like Picard be like, make it fuck.
Well, luckily, Sir Patrick Stewart doesn't drop the F-bombs. It's everyone around him.
Okay.
And he looks jarred too when someone says that. It's like, how dare you use that fucking language in my fucking face, you fuck.
We got Q over here singing Wet Ass Pussy. Timely. Anyway, so Boilermaker is not as impressed with Mariner's lack of etiquette, but Mariner in turn finds the formality of command to be overrated and believe that down in the lower decks is where the real action takes place.
They take a little tour with Tendi on the Doritos, and we meet our next character, Steve, an engineer named Sam Rutherford, played by Eugene Cordero.
Another great improviser and comedian, also on the Billion Dollar Properties.
I think he's been in almost everything since like 2010.
Yeah.
another space-related show that he was on, which no one really knows about, and I was a huge fan. It was called Other Space,
mm-hmm.
which was a TV show that was on the Yahoo network. Remember Yahoo? And they were the ones who, you know, Community pretty much took their entire budget.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do it anymore. So it was actually created by Paul Feig, and it had, had actually a couple of MST3 people, like Joel Hodgson was on it. Trace, I never knew how to pronounce his name. Trace Ballou. He was
Ballou.
He was one of the robots on MST3K. But Eugene was on it. Neil Casey.
Oh, yeah.
The AT&T girl, Milana Ventra.
Yeah.
Karen Soni, who's now in everything. You know, he was in the Deadpool movies as the sidekick. Just a lot of people in it. It was a really funny show. Heather actually introduced me to it.
Huh.
Yeah, there's only like 8 episodes, and good luck trying to find it.
You know what? I feel like I've seen on social media in the past like couple weeks, Paul Feig is trying to get it re-airing on some platform.
Yeah, it's a show that definitely needs to be watched. So so there's Eugene, another fun guy. He's one of those guys too when you're watching something, like, oh, look who it is.
Yeah, it's always a delight. Like, hey, it's Eugene.
All right, well, let's meet Eugene real quick.
Oh, hey, that's Rutherford. Rutherford, what's up? Yo, slow down. Is your thingy acting up?
Rutherford's an engineer. Oh, and as of a couple weeks ago, cybernetically enhanced.
Ooh, I've never met a recent cyborg.
Hey, nice to meet you. Welcome to the crew.
Wait, don't you have a date with Ensign Barnes tonight?
Sure do.
She's crazy hot. Are you nervous?
Trying to be, but this thing keeps tamping it down. Yikes! Okay, you got it. Uh-oh, I'm nervous. What if I say something stupid? What if she doesn't like the way that I look? Oh, I can only look one way. I can't change it by tonight.
Better?
Yeah. Thanks. What if she hates my jokes? I don't know any jokes. Oh, I'm going to puke.
Is he going to be the suave guy that gets all the ladies, like the Captain Kirks, the Commander Rikers of the show?
Maybe, but with like a little twist. I thought it was a nice touch to have like him be a Borg, but not yet be, well, assimilated.
Is that what the idea was? I just thought it was like he's like Geordi, but not. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like I just. Well, I mean, I guess it's a Vulcan implant?
Yeah, they get to that, I think, later.
But, like, I just think the fact that he, I like that it's an interesting concept to have him be like, part, you know, cyborg. Usually you have a character who is trying to, who has a hard time expressing their emotions, whereas he now has no emotions and he wants them. So yeah. It was a fun twist.
Oh, he looks like Cyborg from the DC Comics. Let's call him right, Cyborg.
Yeah. Cyborg. Makes sense. Mariner and Boyman.
Mariner and Boyman.
Mariner and Boyman continue the tour with Tendi before they come to the hallway where most of them sleep, as Ensigns do not have their own quarters on the Cerritos. Tendi does not seem bothered by the environment and is only taken aback by the majestic view of the Cerritos at warp. Boyman has let Tendi know that she would get settled in and report to Nurse Westlake, and she will be his assistant, but Mariner suggests a trip to the ship's holodeck.
Who wouldn't love a trip to the holodeck?
I would love a ship.
You love a ship or a holodeck?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe when I'm in the holodeck, I'll make a ship.
Okay, well, let's go to the holodeck, Steve.
Welcome to the holodeck. Easily the best part of the ship.
The warp core is the best part of the ship, followed by the fridge, the photon torpedo tubes, cetacean ops.
Dude, the warp core is just a big glowing tube.
I love the warp core. The warp core rules.
No, it doesn't. Computer, find us a beach in Hawaii.
What is this? This stuff is crazy. What does it do?
It just gets everywhere and gives you a rash.
You get a rash from sand?
What, you don't?
No, nobody does.
Oh, God. I always do.
Good.
Take it for a spin.
Computer, can you put us in the Adichie Center on Orion? Wow, I never made time to go before I enlisted.
Pretty cool, right? You can go almost anywhere you can imagine. Come on, Boimler, give it a whirl.
I don't know.
Come on, there has to be somewhere you'd love to be.
Computer, show us the warp core. Wow, amazing. What an impressive feat of engineering.
You really bum me out sometimes.
Ensign Boimler, report to the bridge.
You work on the bridge?
Yeah, that's right, because they appreciate people who follow the rules. Who's boring now? On my way.
Wow, does he get to go up there a lot?
Nah, just whenever someone spills a drink or something. Computer, load Mariner program all new to Olympic training facility.
You might want to back up a bit.
Wow, this is a very detailed program.
A dick joke.
Yay, in Star Trek. Detailed dicks, Steve. Detailed dicks.
Detailed dicks.
I like how here was a fun little nod to Star Trek fans when I think it was Boilermaker was like a citation ops. That actually means that there's dolphins on the ship. And it's a reference to Star Trek The Next Generation that they had citation ops and there was actually dolphins on the ship because they helped navigate through space because dolphins are great navigators. So they better have an episode where we get to see dolphins with the Star Trek com badge on them and like little rings on them.
I just imagine them like in a control room sitting on chairs looking at GPS.
They're using Waze.
Yeah.
Star Trek Waze. So that's the end of, I guess, Act 1, Steve. We're going Act 2. We're on the surface of that planet with the Gallimorian guards or whatever, Gamorians.
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot. We're on the planet of Gal Gadot. Isn't that the planet on Futurama, the Amazon planet?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because it's Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon Prime.
Prime, yeah. Anyway, so we meet Commander Jack Ransom, which is the first officer ship played by Jerry O'Connell, Stamos, Romaine, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a fun little fun fact, since he's Jerry O'Connell's playing the first officer, Rebecca Romaine plays the first officer on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. They're married. Whoa. They're the first officers of marriage.
Aww.
Even though it's like their fourth marriages.
Hey, but engaged in love.
They've been married for like 15 years, so there
you go. Yeah, it's been a while.
Been a while. So he's wrapping things up with the Galdarian's High Council, informs the Chancellor there'll be sending construction teams down from the Doritos to help build some subspace communications arrays, you know?
Yeah, of course.
We see some flying insect bite his neck. He signals his ship, the Doritos, and they beam up. And on board the burrito, it's a new ship. So the new ship's now is the burrito.
The burrito, yeah.
So we go from Cerritos to Doritos to burrito. Stevens asks Ransom if he should get that bite looked at, and Ransom says no, and Stevens and Ransom decide it's happy hour and they go get a drink later.
A little bro-y.
Yeah, another thing, like, is that too, like, it's too 2000s, like, hey man, let's go get a beer. Okay.
Yeah. Like, and twins.
Like, yeah, you don't see Commander Riker and Geordi do that.
No, it's
Well, they're like, here's what I think about it too. Is like the Enterprise is like the flagship and it's like the best of the best. It's the Harvard of ships.
Ooh.
Whereas like, I think the Cerritos is more like the Glendale Community College of ships.
Yes. It's University of Phoenix adjacent. Yeah. So Boilermaker arrives at the bridge and walks slowly inside, very nervous. In his nervousness, he doesn't realize that Ransom is wondering why he isn't at his post. At that moment, Captain Carol Freeman enters the bridge and asks Ransom to brief her about the meeting with the Galgadonians. He reports that things are way ahead of schedule, which pleases Freeman. She then takes Boilermaker into her ready room.
Brad Boimler, born Modesto, California, commissioned in 79. Not a single demerit. You keep a personal log?
Sometimes five a day.
That's excessive. Do you see a captain's chair in your future?
I hope so, ma'am.
Well, I see a lot of potential in you, son, which is why I'm giving you a special assignment.
Really? I mean, of course, yes, whatever you need.
Keep an eye on Ensign Mariner. If she breaks protocol, I want a full report.
Sorry, ma'am, is something wrong?
I like my crew working in lockstep. There isn't any wiggle room on the Cerritos, not when lives are at stake. Do you disagree?
No, ma'am.
Good. Dismissed. Ensign, let's keep this between us, shall we?
So, much like Wesley Crusher, when I referenced him earlier with meeting Moondock,
mm-hmm.
and I had a racist thought too, Steve, and I was like, oh, after this, I'm like, I bet that the captain and Mariner's her daughter.
Oh.
And I'm like thinking like, wait, just because they're both black doesn't mm-hmm. mean they have to be related. So that's what I first thought when I saw that scene. I'm like, oh, this is what this is, you know?
Yeah.
Probably her mom and like she has to look after her, but that they wouldn't do something like that, would they?
That would be just a little easy.
Well, so we get to the setup there and we're on the lounge of the Doritos, the 10 forward, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Cyborg, aka Rutherford, is on his date with Ensign Barnes. And she's a, based on the spots on her, Steve, she's a Trill.
Oh.
Those were the symbiote species. They have worms in them where like the worm is like 1,000 years old and has lived all these lives. And the bodies, it's kind of like their vessel. So
yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah. Dax from Deep Space Nine was one of those Trills.
Yeah. Dax Shepard. And
Dax Shepard. I imagine he's got some weird worm in his body.
Oh yeah.
anyway, so, Rutherford's implants giving him some troubles there, like you said earlier, and he goes kind of like Vulcan on her. It was kind of a funny scene. Barnes is still interested in him, and noting that her father also was cybernetically enhanced. I wonder where, though.
That's why. You know, my dad had a big dick.
Big robot dick.
It was Klingon. Klingon on me.
Oh, Jesus. That's his daughter.
Sorry.
Space daughter, Steve, is different.
Space daughter. That's fine.
And they're Trills, you know, we don't know what they're...
Yeah, maybe space incest is okay.
What I said, there's slugs in their body, like, there's not actually them, so...
Yeah, big old slug in her body.
Robot slug.
Yeah.
All right, well, so we're at the transporter, Steve, and Boilermaker and the Submariner are getting ready to beam down to the planet with an away team, and she's teasing him about why he was called to the bridge, and Boilermaker's visibly unamused, and they beam down to the planet. And on the surface, we meet Lieutenant Commander Andy Billup, who's played by someone that sounds a little familiar, Steve. Oh, I don't know, maybe one Paul Scheer.
Oh.
I think it's fun to hear Paul's voice.
Always is.
Yeah. Paul Scheer, you know, one of the big names in podcasting and just everywhere too.
Yep. On the Showtime show Black Monday currently.
Yeah. With TV's Don Cheadle.
Exactly.
So Lieutenant Commander Paul Scheer, he tells the crew to start working on the subspace array and Mariner and her group leave.
And then so back in the lounge, the date is going really well between Cyborg and Barnes & Noble. When suddenly Ransom begins to have a seizure at the bar.
Oh, no.
His insect bite has given him a virus. Oh, no. The crew panics as he suddenly begins to behave feral and attacks other crew members by biting and infecting them. The crew tries to subdue him by setting their phasers to stun, but the crew is quickly getting infected. Despite the chaos unfolding around them, Cyborg and Barnes & Noble still take some time to get to know each other.
I like that, the scene. They're just, everyone's shooting each other and biting, and they're just, you know, still getting along with their date.
Cute, yeah.
Yeah. So we're back to the planet, and Boilermaker notices that the Submariner is sneaking some contraband.
Ooh.
in a vehicle. That's the, if you ever saw that crappy Star Trek Nemesis, Captain Picard is driving a car, and that's the same thing.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this Boilermaker thinks something illegal is going on, Steve.
Oh no. So outside the Doritos sick bay, Tandy walks in and is shocked to see multiple infected crew members being restrained on biobeds, spewing black bile. Biobeds and black bile. The crew medical officer, a Cetacean?
Yeah,
they're cats.
Yeah.
Dr. Tana orders her to assist in strapping infected crew to their beds.
Hey, you! Green Girl! Strap patients down as they come in. Double them up if you have to. They aren't going to infect each other twice.
I was actually supposed to be assisting Nurse Westlake.
That is Nurse Westlake!
Wow, it's such an honor to meet you, sir. I'm looking forward to working with you.
So, the Cetacean, Catlins, you know, they first made their appearance in Star Trek, the animated series. There was a cat lady on the show.
Huh. Not like a cat lady, but a cat lady.
It's the same species as the Dr. TNA. Yeah. We say TNA because that's how it's spelled, TNA.
Yeah.
Tiana. Let's just call her Dr. Meowcoy.
I like that.
All right. You know, if I continue watching the series, I think she'll easily become one of my favorite characters. I just like the idea that the doctor is a cat and cats are all, you know, ornery. And it just makes sense that, like, it's like Dr. McCoy was always, like, terrible bedside manner. So it'd be fun to see more Dr.
But he did have heart.
Yeah. So we, another jarring graphic scene there in sick bay.
Oh, yeah.
So we're back on the planet with Boilermaker and Submariner, and they're in a small hut, and they're meeting two of the Gal Gadolians. And then he just confronts her because she's selling Federation weapons to the Gal Gadolians, Steve. Oof. She tries to calm him down, and he demands to explain what she's doing. Let's describe the Gal Gadolians real quick. They're little funny little pig people.
Yeah, they're cute, like little pig farmers.
Which is funny because and I said they look like Gamorrean guards, and the Galdorians Gamorrean from Star Wars, the pig people Jedi.
Mm-hmm. They really do, like little baby ones.
But they're kind of adorable.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind a Gal Gadolian in my house.
That'd be fine.
Yeah, so the Gal Gadolians back away because they're intimidated by Boilermaker's behavior. But Boilermaker pulls out one of those old dustbusters, or phasers, as they like to call them, and holds them at gunpoint.
Ooh.
Nobody move! Selling Starfleet technology without the express consent of the Federation Council is a breach of Regulations 498 and 756.
And Regulations 25, 15, 348. You're breaking 76 just for pointing that phaser at me.
Fine. You know more regulations than me. I still have to stop you.
It's farm equipment, you idiot. They're farmers.
I'm not an idiot. You expect me to believe that... Shovel and Hoe.
Steve, Shovel and Hoe. That was the name of our band in high school.
Yeah, Shovel and Hoe.
We did full covers of Iron Maiden songs.
Run to the hills.
Hey, Steve, you got to be careful singing that song. They mentioned the Redskins in the song.
Oh, you're right.
It was a Washington football club.
Yeah.
I like another kind of funny Star Trek-y joke with the regulation numbers, you know, because they always spew out random bullshit on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Submariner knows her stuff. Like, Boilermaker's kind of a wiener.
Yeah.
Hmm. So we go on to Act 3. So we have the spider creature appear.
Yeah. Scary.
Scary. And it's searching for Submariner and Boilermaker as they hide from it. Mariner angrily explains that she left her post to help the farmers, knowing they wouldn't be able to wait for any approval of Starfleet because, you know, bureaucracy. Then Boilermaker asks how she knew about the people, and she explains.
I was here for first contact last year on the Keto before I got my ass demoted and transferred to the Cerritos.
Well, I didn't know that.
I have served on 5 ships, man. I have seen stuff. One time, I got trapped in a sentient cave for weeks. You ever been trapped in a sentient cave? That's a dark place that knows things. I almost got my head taken off by a singing crystal. I've been in a Klingon prison where I had to fight a Yeti for my own shoes for no reason. He was just being a dick. You've been on what? 4 planets?
5, if you include Vulcan.
Of course I don't include stupid Vulcan. You may as well count Earth.
I was counting Earth.
You don't know anything except what's in your manuals. Since you can't think for yourself, how about you follow my lead, and maybe we'll get out of this alive.
I thought that was kind of a fun little passage there.
Yeah, that was probably Mariner's lines. I think that whole diatribe was probably my favorite.
Yeah, and there's, again, more like Star Trek references when she's like talking about the Klingon prison planet has to fight a Yeti for shoes. It's a reference to Star Trek VI when Captain Kirk has to fight a giant monster for shoes.
I think I remember that. Was there ever a living cave?
I don't remember. Maybe that was like a Star Trek Voyager episode. I'm not too like 100% my knowledge on like Voyager and Enterprise, but yeah.
The idea of a living cave just sounds really haunting to me.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's this reference because like the Star Trek caves is such like a common like set that they use on like all of Star Trek, like a cave, because we have that, the styrofoam sets.
Right.
And, but we learn a little bit more about Mariner, why she's kind of jaded. You know, she's been on a couple ships and it sounds like she was, you know, like one of those up and comers, like a Wesley Crusher type character.
Right. So this, I don't think they ever say it, but how old do you think these characters are supposed to be?
Oh yeah, I was going to bring that up too. I would probably say that I think the Mariner, I think she's probably got to be close to like her 30s.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like Boilermaker, like Tendi's obviously going to be like 21.
Yeah, she's like fresh off, she's new and young.
Yeah. Rutherford's probably like 24. And I'm going to say, yeah, they're about like 23, 24.
Okay.
But yeah. Mariner's probably a little bit older.
Yeah.
Steve, if we were in Starfleet, we're in our late 30s now. Mm-hmm. What rank do you think we would be?
I definitely only have one dot in my collar.
So you'd be an ensign still?
Yeah.
I would say I get, because the way the ranks goes ensign, lieutenant, junior grade, lieutenant, lieutenant commander, and captain. I think at my age, I think I'd be at lieutenant junior grades.
Yeah, I think so. I tend to like fall myself into promotions with jobs where
yeah
I become like upper, lower, middle management.
I'd say maybe we're full two dots, Steve. We're full lieutenants.
Yeah, I think so.
And we have like a section of the Doritos, because we would definitely be on a ship like this. We wouldn't be on like an Enterprise.
No, yeah.
Maybe, although I'd probably be more on like a space station, because I like to settle in. I don't want to like be going places.
Yeah.
So we'd be on a space. Well, I'd be on a space station.
Because that's what you want out of a Star Trek job, is to boldly go nowhere.
Yeah, I wanted to be Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
I would just, you know, I have like a section of like underlings that probably just clean the replicators.
Yeah.
That's our job, Steve, in Starfleet. I'm just going to call you Lieutenant Steve for the rest on this podcast, all right?
Okay. Okay, Captain Craig.
No, I'm Lieutenant, I said.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to call you Captain Craig still.
I'll be calling you Sergeant Steve. That's not the Starfleet ranks, but it starts with an S.
Yeah, that's right.
Boilermaker wants to signal the Doritos to transport away. But Mariner throws his comm badge before they beam up, and they refuse to leave the farmers. So the farmers need that spider creature before they're hiding from, and they're responsible to bring it back to them. And she cites General Order 5, Steve.
Hmm.
You know General Order 5, of course.
Of course, it's
the thing.
Yeah.
I think our audience should know that. It's General Order 5. But Boilermaker suggests that they stun the spider creature. But Mariner comes up with a better idea, Steve, and that involves them taking off their clothes.
Oh, yeah.
To make dummies, of course, with the clothes to distract Spider-Man.
That's not the most original plot idea, like making the dummies. That's
They never did it on Star Trek. Although I would have seen like Captain Kirk probably like with like some like young, you know, female like, I think we need to take off our clothes. Like, Captain, we're on the bridge. Oh, right.
I got a bridge in my pants.
Damn it, Jim.
So,
I'm a doctor, not a boner healer.
Why are you called Bones? Yeah. I don't know who.
Okay, I guess I am a boner healer.
Need some Vulcan Viagra.
It's green.
So as the spider creature attacks the dummies, Submariner jumps on the back and tells Boilermaker to jump out on as well, since the spider creature is unable to reach them on the back. Boilermaker hesitates, but jumps, only to be caught in the maw of the spider creature. As he panics, the Gal Gadolians, farmers, arrive on the scene.
Please don't phaser her, it'll spoil the milk!
Did you hear that? I can't let it eat him.
She's an herbivore, she's just gumming on him to suckle out some moisture.
Oh, okay, hey, Brad, good news, buddy. So it's just suckling you, I've just learned. You're fine. Hang in there, you got this. It is getting tired, so go to your happy place. Like, oh, think about the warp core.
You want a snack or something?
Yeah, you got any of that milk?
I also like the voice of the Gal Gadolians.
Mm-hmm.
You get any milk? A fun little scene there.
Yeah, suckling on the maw until the little moisture comes out. Pretty gross. So we go back to the Doritos, where the situation with the infected crew is quickly getting out of hand. An announcement goes out for any uninfected crew members to meet at the transporter room 8 to stage a rallying point. Cyborg and Mars Noble are cut off from the crew and embark on a spacewalk to get to the rally point. They continue to get to know each other as well as they walk on the hull.
I really like this classical band called the Monkees. Ever heard of them?
Let's just say I'm a believer.
Star Trek cheesy line.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about this because you were talking earlier about using modern slang in Star Trek. And I think I may have mentioned it on our Prime podcast one time when we were talking about Star Trek. But it always bothered me in the J.J. Abrams movies when Kirk steals the car and he blasts the radio. It's playing Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, which has always bothered me because it's like a 300-year-old song. So for a kid to blast it is weird.
That'd be like us blasting Beethoven.
Exactly. It's weird that a movie from like 2009 or whatever is playing the Beastie Boys too. But
well, and I always thought that scene was weird too because the Beastie Boys mentioned Spock in Intergalactic.
Yeah, so that should create some sort of weird vortex.
Yeah. Well, here's another interesting thing. The reason I played that clip is because they mentioned the Monkees, which was, of course, a popular TV show in the 60s. Also one of Marge Simpson's favorite shows, Steve.
It's true.
Let's keep a little Simpsons in here, right?
Yeah.
But during season 2 of Star Trek, they added the character of Chekhov and made him look like Davy Jones.
Oh, you're right.
Because they wanted to appeal to get like younger women in. So like Chekhov was meant to be like, oh, look, he looks like a monkey.
He does look like Davy Jones like a lot.
Yeah. So like hopefully little girls will watch the show, which of course it was weird because they wanted like, you know, another reason too, like Chekhov was Russian. But at that time, you know, everything on TV about Russians was usually like they're the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Cold War was going on. But I thought that was interesting that maybe that, I think that was a reference maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
And here's another fun thing too. They do a space, this movie's called Second Contact. And you remember in the movie Star Trek First Contact, there's a whole thing where like they actually go on out of space to do a spacewalk the same way.
Oh yeah.
So there's kind of like parallels to actually the movie's First Contact where there's something going down on the planet and the ship, you know, there's a big virus like outbreak, people are getting killed just like in Star Trek First Contact. The Borg were on the ship and then, you know, the crew was doing other things on the planet not knowing what the hell was going on either ends. So interesting little like let's just do the First Contact plot. Anyways.
Yeah.
So they reach the deck gates, Cyborg and Barnes & Noble. They almost get trapped in the sealed door and it doesn't recognize their combat signatures. But with a little quick adjustment, Rutherford gets the door open and both he and Barnes & Noble make it through the door and it shuts, separating them from the zombies. And Barnes & Noble immediately kisses him.
Oh.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that.
What did you expect?
Well, for these maintenance hatch doors to recognize our comm badges.
Oh, no, I mean, what just happened?
I'm more worried about what didn't just happen. Failure analysis estimates the reliability of this mechanism at 1 out of 4.69 repeating.
Ugh.
Oh, are you seeing this?
There's a couple moments in the show where that's how Star Trek people act.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a fun clip.
Yeah, it is interesting because the world of Star Trek is so, not militaristic, but just kind of so like officer-based, where they're a bunch of nerds. And so...
Exactly, yeah.
To see this, it's kind of cool to see that play out.
Right.
In sickbay, Dr. Miao Koi notes that the anesthetic she's using on the crew is having no effect, and that Tendi manual pump Steven's heart with her own hands.
Whose heart?
My heart.
That's my heart! It hurts when you pump it! Oh, God! Oh.
Sorry. Sorry.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Oh. Sorry.
It's more of a visual gag, but I kind of enjoy that.
It's effectively gross. I don't know why, but the concept of blood flowing through my veins grosses me out.
I get you. Like, even like little paper cuts.
Yeah. And like when they show like in the 90s, especially with like Nine Inch Nails videos, they'd show like video clips of blood going through veins.
Yeah.
And it gives me the oogies.
That's why we're not doctors, Steve. That's the main reason.
Because we're stupid.
No, we just don't like blood or feces or any bodily fluid that's in a human body.
That's right.
So let's go back to the planet where the Spider-Man has finally worn itself out and we get a traumatized nude Boilermaker pulling away from its maw by a Submariner. He's covered in some pink slime. And so they head back to camp and Boilermaker tells the Submariner that he was ordered to spy on her and report breaches of conduct directly to the captain. Submariner only responds that she doesn't know why he holds the senior staff in such high esteem, because all they care about is glory and getting mentioned in history, and they don't really care about the crew that's under them, you know, them lower decks, Steve.
That's right.
But Boilermaker refuses to believe her, and he says that he intends to report on her.
Oh no, that's gonna get her in trouble, and it's gonna ruin their relationship.
Yeah, it'll probably be the end of the series.
I guess so. Well, they arrive to camp and immediately beam to the Doritos, where they're taken by surprise as they see the crew fighting their infected crew members. The battle is quick turning against them, and Freeman asks for recommendations. A Bajoran officer named Shax recommends detonating the warp core, but Freeman disagrees. As this happens, Dr. Miao approaches Boilermaker.
Captain, I'm sure you're wondering where my uniform is.
Sax, what are my options?
I recommend we detonate the entire warp core, Captain.
What? No!
We need to get this man to sickbay immediately. He is very important.
What makes him so special?
Nothing. He's worthless. It's the slime, Captain. He's covered in slime that could save us all.
Everyone, protect this slime!
I like the Bajoran security guy, Dr. Shax,
mm-hmm.
very much the Worf character, and like the comment, like, let's just blow things up, which is like, yeah. what Worf's suggestion was, like on Star Trek, was always there's a ship in distress and we can't beam them out because of static electricity. What do we do?
Well, I suggest we fire phasers at them, Captain.
Worf, that would kill them all.
I don't care.
It would be an honorable death.
they're missionaries, Worf. They're they have orphans on the ship.
Don't care.
Honorable death.
They have the cure for COVID-19, finally.
My freedom's my rights. Let me punch somebody.
Mr. Wolf, as long as you wear a mask.
No mask. No glory.
Oh, all right. Well, so they got to protect that slime, Steve.
Just like the Ghostbusters. So once in sickbay, Dr. Miyakoi discovers that the slime completely neutralizes the rage effect found in the virus and synthesizes a cure. She gives it to Ransom via hypospray and is disturbed when she is told that he ate flesh. Dr. Miyakoi distributes the cure through the ship's ventilation system, and the crew almost immediately returns to normal. Freeman commends her for her cure, but Dr. TNA only seems frustrated by the amount of paperwork she'll need to fill out. As the senior officers leave, Submariner scolds them that they gave Boilermaker no credit for saving them, but she is ignored. Boilermaker, Mariner, Tandy, and Rutherford, Cyborg, sit together in sickbay.
Still happy to be here?
Are you kidding? I got to hold a heart!
Tandy's really into this, Steve.
Yep, she's excited.
Yeah, so the captain's giving a little captain's log, thanking the Dr. Meow McCoy. The crew saved. She credits the senior staff.
Yeah,
and she ends solely. Recording. Yeah, solely just the senior staff. And Boilermaker enters Captain Freeman's ready room. And she asks about Submariner's behavior on the mission. But Boilermaker says that Mariner didn't breach any protocol, that both he and her spent the mission just, you know, adjusting some subspace comm rays. But Captain Freeman doubts the claim, saying that he was beamed back to the Doritos covered in bite marks and wearing some alien frock. But Boilermaker just simply blames the pink slime for having an effect on his memory and says that Mariner engaged in no insubordinate behavior and that he remembers. So Captain Freeman is frustrated but dismisses him. After she leaves, she gets a phone call, Steve, from Starfleet.
Huh.
And she answers it.
Everything all right, Captain Freeman? I heard you had some sort of rage virus.
Ransom tried to eat a guy. We're fine. Listen, I've had enough. I'm throwing her in the brig.
We already tried that. You know it doesn't work. She loves the brig.
She undermines me in front of the crew.
I'm sure nobody notices.
Yeah, they do.
Sweetheart, just...
Don't you sweetheart me. We agreed. If she didn't fit in here, you'd send her back to the Keto. Well, she doesn't fit in.
I gotta go. Admiral stuff. Love you.
Don't you hang up on me. She's your daughter, too.
Hanging up now.
Don't you dare.
Here's on the button.
Don't you!
Oh, Steve.
Oh, boy.
That's her father and her mother? I guess I'm not racist thinking that. I'm not saying sloppy writing, but obvious writing.
Yeah. The three black characters in the show are related.
When you were watching it, did you think related?
I hoped not. I was hoping just for a diverse cast of people who are not related, but meh.
So what I'm getting from this is that it's kind of like, because in Star Trek The Next Generation, you had a kid, you had Wesley Crusher on there, and his mom was the doctor, and his whole thing is like, I want to be Starfleet. Then you had Deep Space Nine, which had Commander Sisko and his son, Jake, which I appreciate what they did with the character, because they're like assuming there's even an episode where like Sisko's like, oh, you're at the age to go to Starfleet Academy. Aren't you excited to go to Starfleet Academy? And Jake's all like, you know what, Dad? I don't want to be in Starfleet. I just want to be a writer. And so it was kind of cool. Like, not everyone wants to be in Starfleet.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like that's kind of like the story arc for Mariner, is that both her parents are like, one's an admiral, one's a captain. They're both highly regarded Starfleet officers. And of course, she just has to do that because that's the family business.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll see eventually, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine it's kind of a situation where she bucks trends, but then proves to be effective. And when push comes to shove, she knows what to do. Kind of like Kirk, basically, in the
JJ movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the course that's going to happen with this series.
Make it so.
Right.
In the mess hall, Tendi and Cyborg are talking about their recent date with Barnes, and Tendi expresses sympathy that the rage virus ruined his date. But Cyborg is unconcerned with that. He explains that she was smart, pretty, and very effective in a ship-wide crisis, but they won't likely see each other again. Tendi questions this.
Well, you survived an epic, life-threatening situation together. Don't you share a bond?
Oh, for sure. But she had zero interest in figuring out why a red alert overrode Maintenance Hatch 70's access protocols. It's like, can you even imagine?
I'm sorry. What? It did?
Yes! I mean, who has time for romance when there's a level 2 diagnostic just sitting there waiting to be run?
Mm-mm. Don't have to tell me twice. I am right there.
So that clip was fun because that's kind of a callback, and I love how Tendi's like, you know, the same, the nerdy thing, you know?
Yeah. And so, yeah, you mentioned that maybe Cyborg will be like the ladies' man. What I would like to see for his arc is for each episode he becomes more and more volcanic. More strict, more robotic. And there so was... by season 10, he has like a different voice. And he's, you know, maybe he's like, it is his story arc and like he turns almost evil maybe, or I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I have kind of equate this idea of if you watch like, you know, any episode of Star Trek, there's always like a love interest. Mm-hmm. And then by the next episode, like they're never spoke of again.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's kind of like a nod to that. The romance type episodes always bugged me of like TNG because they didn't really know how to write for like Crush or Counselor Troy because they're like, well, they're a woman, so let's make this episode about them falling in love. And it never understood because it was always like a new alien ambassador is aboard and after a day they're in love and then after 2 days they have to go away and they're like, oh, my heart is broken. I'm like, no, that's not how things work.
Yeah. And also if it was the way things work, you should be used to it by now.
Yeah.
You're on the Starfleet. I mean, it's gonna be.
It was weird at the beginning, like were they setting up that Tendi and Boilermaker are going to be an item because he's kind of like all flabbergasted when he's but it seems like Tendi and Ruth and Cyborg Rutherford are like going to be the pals.
Yeah, I think that like either they should have Cyborg have a new lady interest every week or they could build that relationship.
Yeah, I think maybe more of the Rutherford and Tendi thing is going to be more like a brother and sister type of thing.
That could be, yeah.
Or just best friends. I think that's what it'll be. And I think maybe they will like try to hook Tendi and Boilermaker up. Because you know, the obvious would be like, well, make it Boilermaker and Submariner because they're the stars of the show.
Right. I would really not ruin the show for me, but it would really not be good.
I think it's just our brains always set to like when you watch TV shows, like, oh, we have to, because we grew up with like 90s and 80s sitcoms where like everyone had to have a couple or relationship. And that's just not, we don't need that, but that's our brains trained that way, you know?
Right. Like, oh, Friends, Office.
Right.
Like, Parks and Rec, like so many shows.
Like, yeah, exactly. You think of Friends, like Rachel literally dated every single guy on the show. Mm-hmm. You know, did she even date Gunther?
Probably.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's go back. We're with Boilermaker. He's coming up to Mariner, and he thanks her for admitting that it felt good helping the Gal Gadoians, and admits that, well, the way she does things is a little unorthodox, but Starfleet is still better with her in it. And realizing that he did not report to her, as he threatened to, she forgives him and promises to help him one day reach the rank of captain.
Ooh.
So she appoints herself as mentor and begins to express some pride for the Lower Decks. And, you know, going lower decks. Again, another like, oh, do we need this? And so we see the captain, her mom, watching the distance, but she's, you know, unamused by her daughter's behavior. And Mariner and Boilermaker and Tendi and Cyborg, they walk out of the 10 forward with the Submariner, excitedly talking about some Starfleet history, Steve.
You're going to be my Chadich from now on, baby.
I don't want lessons
Klingons,
from you.
They're all about fighting. They're always making oaths about everything.
Everyone knows
Did
that.
Did you know about Spock? Dude came back from being dead.
Yeah, I think I've heard of Spock.
He's a freaking Genesis device and fought Khan and some space
Can
whales.
Can we just go back to not being friends?
How about Sulu? Ooh, he rocked a sword. That was his thing. That could be your thing, too. We're due for a new sword
what
guy.
What can I do to make this stop, please?
Do you know Kirk?
Yes.
My man Worf?
Yes.
Gary Mitchell?
I'm sure I could look him up.
You don't have to, because you have a mentor.
No, don't touch
do you
me.
Know Deanna Troi?
Well, that was the episode. We see the Cerritos away and enters the warp for the next adventure, Steve.
Hmm.
She does some name drops of Spock, mm-hmm. Khan from Wrath of Khan, and Sulu, and Kirk, and Worf, and then Gary Mitchell. Steve, do you know who Gary Mitchell is?
Isn't he a bike?
No, I like how they said, like, I could look him up. And he was actually, like, from the very first one of the first episodes of Star Trek, the original series. And he was, mm-hmm. He had, like, godlike powers, and Kirk had to kill him.
Huh.
Yeah. It was the second pilot that they produced, but it was actually aired like fourth episode. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And Counselor Troy, of course.
Right. I feel like that last scene is such so like typical of a series premiere or a pilot of just like, hey friend, we may not see eye to eye, but in the end we're good and we agree with one another.
Yes, this episode definitely is the a pilot.
Yeah, it feels so pilot-y.
Okay, well, that was the episode, Steve. Do you think you would watch the next episode?
Maybe. I'm not like completely sold on it, but I would like to see where they go. I think that the week-to-week adventure would be a lot of fun, but yeah, what about you?
Here's the thing about like pilots is they're never the best episode of a series. They're usually the worst. And it's because you have to do so much exposition. You have to establish these characters, like who they are. One of the greatest pilots of all time, of course, is the Cheers pilot, because they establish exactly who everyone is with just like one line of dialogue.
Yeah.
If you want to be a writer, I recommend watching that pilot, reading that script.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, the Cheers pilot. And I think that a lot of this too is like they kind of like use that, like, let's make sure we can kind of make this the Cheers pilot. Also, Star Trek pilots in general are never that good.
Like, if you were to that's watch, not good for the ship.
Damn, that was bad. Usually the helmsmans of Star Trek. But yeah, I'll continue watching and I could see it growing and maybe becoming better with just like, you know, the adventures of week to week, and there might be some fun stuff. So yeah, I'll probably watch it again.
My biggest question for the show is kind of, I mean, I guess it's for Star Trek fans, but what is its demographic audience that they're aiming for?
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, obviously with an adult quote-unquote cartoon, you know, you might expect some crass humor, and there was like a little bit, but not much.
Yeah, they had like little bleeps in here, like the Dr. Miyakoi, you know, said like shit and stuff like that, but they bleep it out.
So I guess it's kind of aiming for like teenagers.
But again, it's on a pay app. You know, what teenager is going to spend money on an app? They don't want to.
Oh, come on. All the kids love CBS All Access.
Now, if this was on like CW, that's a free app. Maybe.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think the show does have potential, and this pilot was very pilot-y. But at the core, like, the four primary characters, I think were fun.
I found that Submariner was kind of, I like Tiny Newsome, but I just felt she was kind of, her character was annoying in this show.
You know what they kind of need, I think, is a, almost like a fifth character who's more goofy comic relief, because she's kind of supposed to be like the crazy one, but also like the star of the show, but you need like,
like a
Scotty or like something.
Yeah, because Boilermaker is, you know, he's also, he's like Rick, you know, or Morty. Which one's the frantic kid? Morty.
Yeah.
Because he even acts that way, too.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I don't know.
You know, like, and Tendi's like the kid, and Rutherford's, I mean, maybe Rutherford's the one, but he's also kind of like smart, too. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed that character in Tendi. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing what, you know, their relationship and with everyone. But yeah. And Dr. Miyakoi, I think, will be fun.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. And, you know, seeing the Upper Deck crew, it's kind of cool how they set that up, you know, in its own diverse way. And then you have this Below Deck that is...
You know, it's funny. There was actually an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation called Lower Decks, which kind of had the same premise. It was just talked about like four, you know, ensigns.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually recommend watching that. Kind of has like the parallels, obviously, with this show.
Yeah.
How about some final thoughts? Like, what do you think?
I think it's fun. I would love to see how it grows. I think there's potential there. I think it's a little clunky, just the character structure, but I think it could grow into itself, and I hope that it gets more than 10 episodes to really establish what it is.
Well, Steve, I'll let you know. It's already been picked up for a second season.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have at least 20 episodes. Like I said, it's not the strongest. Is it a comedy? You know, you said, what is it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if I actually laughed out loud like we do with like Simpsons episodes. Definitely a different, you know, it's in a different league. Can a non-Star Trek fan watch this and enjoy it? My views is it's meant for Star Trek fans, but not like uber Star Trek fans that like establish this canon, blah, you know, like who over every little detail.
Yeah, it's interesting because as a kind of Star Trek layperson, I got a lot of the references, but clearly not all of them. I don't want to say that I felt like I was missing out, but like there were some things going over my head, which I think is fine. But yeah, I just wonder if it's tonally Star Trek-y enough for Star Trek fans, or conversely, not too much Star Trek-y for non-fans. It's kind of a thin line there.
I think it is for the Star Trek fans, and I think it's more like a, it's an appetizer before we get to like our main shows that are on right now, like the Discoveries and the Picards.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like a sous-son of Star Trek. You know, it's
Wow.
It's just there. And I think it's like, it's going to be more like an homage to the Next Generation, especially with like the fonts and even the year. Because in the canon universe, this takes place a year after Star Trek Nemesis, which was the last of the Star Trek like 24th century TV shows and movies that they were doing before Abrams reboot and then the Discovery. So yeah, I think they're going to have like definitely with all the actors like still around, like I wouldn't be surprised if they have like, oh my God, we're getting an Admiral Picard transmission, like, and just having Patrick Stewart just like record a line or two of dialogue, or Geordi or any of those guys, you know. So that might be fun, but I think that's what I'm kind of looking forward to, like with all the silly references. And then all of like, I bet they'll, you know, bring a character, like why not bring George Takei back to play like Grand Admiral Sulu, you know.
Yeah.
He's probably still alive. Again, not my favorite of Star Trek's as of now. I don't know where I'd place it. I know we do arbitrary rankings on the Simpsons podcast, but I'll do like a real one here. I'd actually probably give this, I will just give this a solid C, maybe C minus. Like, I wasn't wowed. I'm going to watch and see where it goes.
I agree with you. I think that C minus is where I would place this too. I think that it could grow into something, but it needs to find better footing with the balance of, you know, being serious and being comedic. I'm curious to see what other elements, how they like expand this, because I feel like this is part of like an effort to take the Star Wars model of creating this vast world of different platform things and putting it in the Star Trek world.
Because what if Disney, when bought the Star Wars, like here's all this Star Wars stuff on Disney Plus and
right.
Yeah, right. I think that's exactly what's going on too, because there's more Star Trek coming out than there ever was when I was a kid. So
because like I wonder how they're going to play the kids animated show on Nickelodeon.
Right. The Prodigy, which again, I'll watch that too, but
I feel like it's going to be a similar kind of thing. Like Prodigy makes me think that it's like a young upstart going through Starfleet Academy.
I think what I read about that is that it's a bunch of kids find a derelict Starfleet ship and start like flying it.
Huh.
Yeah. That's the premise that I got from it. So, well, I guess that was this episode of Eye Off Springfield. If any of our fans out there want us to check out something else, go ahead and email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com.
And you can always contact us on the social medias at 138simpsons on the Instagram, the Twitter, and the Facebook.
We also have a TeePublic store at teepublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys.
And you can always go to your favorite podcatching app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent. And why don't you write your favorite entity of Star Trek, be it TNG, OG, or whatever, Voyager.
Sure. All right. Thanks for listening. I've been half an annoyed grunt boy, Craig.
And I've been your other half annoyed grunt boy, Steve.
And remember, keep watching the skis.
Beam me up.